Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 27th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week. Short for news.
Nope.
A ton of stuff has happened. Some related to last week, where one of the big stories of last week evolved to another platform on PC. We'll talk about that. We got some delays. We got a game deciding to not be fully out anymore for obvious reasons. We got a franchise joining the gaming realm that has not happened yet. A bunch of other things happening here. We'll get to that before we do. We'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Abiotic Factor that is on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus. I'm playing it on PS5 for that. It is very much a survival game in the vein of things like Subnautica, Minecraft, a bunch of other stuff like that. You can play with a few other people. I'm not sure if it's three total or four total people, but you can have some people helping you out, but you also can play it solo. You're just probably going to have slower progress in that. But it is very much in the flavor of a Half-Life style world, but in Australia.
Yeah.
The intro and like the tutorial stuff is very much you on your first day at this facility. It's out in the middle of the desert. And you happen to show up on the day where some wild stuff has happened. Probably similarly to the way that Half-Life starts, where people, scientists working on like transdimensional machinery, had something go haywire, and a bunch of these creatures get out in the facility, and you are kind of dealing with the after effects of that. The tutorial kind of just runs through a lot of the basic control stuff and basically ends when you get to an elevator that takes you down into the facility where you reach the cafe area. And the interesting thing is you make your own character, and it's, you know, very fluid in the way you design it. You have a lot of options for hair and all that kind of stuff, but it is also very 90s polygonal 3D graphics kind of stuff that has a really nice look to it. And it's sort of the kind of character design that is not very non-binary. Like the bodies have, I think, like three or four options for essentially female showing or masculine showing. You can mix them with any kind of hair and facial hair and all that kind of stuff. So you can kind of go in a number of ways on that stuff. So that's kind of a nice aspect of this. Though if you're playing solo, you're not going to really see much of your character because it's first person. And yeah, you're starting out in this cafe area and you've run into a scientist who is like, this guy I know that I don't really like professionally is over here locked out of this area. You need to figure this out because I'm not going to do anything. He just sits there the entire time. And so you're kind of looking around to see like what you can do, and you find some vents that you can use to get out. Otherwise, most every other avenue is blocked off with a locked door or something. And yeah, you're kind of getting through here, collecting some materials. You have a decent amount of space for that stuff early on. But kind of the main way you're dealing with enemies at that point is with these nets that you can make with cloth scraps. You essentially throw it onto these like little goober enemies that locks them in place, and then you stomp them, and you can collect their guts, because there's a lot of that kind of stuff to this game. And you kind of keep exploring, and eventually find your way to this door. Through like a warehouse area, it has fall damage to it, so you can kind of, you know, damage your legs in such a way that you have to be careful with how you're getting around after that. you can make, you know, bandages to and splints to heal you up, though those will take a little bit of time to work. But if you're kind of short on materials, you can just kind of, if you're not pushing yourself too much, kind of let it heal naturally. Mm-hmm. Kind of circle around to the kitchen area, which has some more enemies to it. They kind of feel like the enemies from Half-Life, maybe mixed with the ones from the Tremors franchise. They got some of those kind of jaw-like structures of the the big Tremors worms and the, I forget what they call the ones in the sequels. I know one of them's like Ass Blaster, I think they call it, like that. They got some looks of that. But yeah, you kind of work your way around, and I've holed up in the essentially the break room of this area, because it's got at least an extra door on each side, blocked off from any potential enemies. And it doesn't seem like enemies will spawn like a Minecraft, where enemies will just spawn at certain times, or randomly whenever it deems it time to do so. You kind of get a little note on your screen like, yeah, you're in a safe place mostly. But yeah, once you kind of get to this other door where the scientist dude is at, and it's like, oh, you got to make this this battery thing to power the door. And that's where essentially once you do it, you've essentially gotten out of the second tutorial of sorts. You go to power up that door, let the scientist in, and a big creature kills him. And then you're dealing with a big enemy, which I died on my first try at it, which kind of freaked me out, because it felt like maybe you shouldn't be dying so much, but also I'm playing this solo, so it's a little bit tougher. Because I used my kitchen knives and was like slashing them a bunch. Maybe the nets would have worked, I don't know, but I didn't try it on that enemy. It's a game that seems like it probably would really work well with a wiki. So if you have questions on like what the best way to take on enemies and whatnot would be versus the in-game system. Which is more of a, you know, like a repository of information. It's like very basic information just about the type of creature it is and what the scientists would know about it. Which usually is couched with a lot of, have a lot of reinforced, you know, walls between you and creature kind of thing, which, you know, is not a thing that you can necessarily do in this game.
Right.
Or at least not initially. So yeah, that was my first encounter. I dealt with that the second time. And so, yeah, I started building stuff in the break room, built a crafting table, as you would expect from this kind of game. And that kind of opens up the ability to make more things, though you can make a lot of basic stuff without it. But there are other crafting tables that you can make, one for like repairing items and scrapping items, one for cooking stuff, because hunger is a big deal here. I feel like there should be options to lessen some of that stuff, but maybe that's not in there yet. I haven't really, you know, taken a huge look at everything on that stuff. But yeah, I've been enjoying it. I've explored the next section pretty well. You basically get out there and you meet a security guard who's locked himself into his little security checkpoint room with like tons of canned peas and such. He's like a trader. You can bring him stuff. So like the skull of the creature that you kill, I forget what they call it. You can trade that to him for a trinket that is essentially an employee locator that will essentially highlight enemies or employees through walls. So if you're looking for other people to either find more information about what's going on, potentially like trading or doing a little quest for them, that kind of stuff. That's a very useful thing, especially to know like, okay, there's probably no enemies in that immediate space that they're in, but there might be some around. So I've mostly fought the little goobers that hop around that are pretty easy to take out with nets and knives and such. And I've been enjoying it. I'm basically at the point where I'm trying to get through this. I forget what they call it. Another wing of the building, the facility. And I need to get up to the second level because there's a forklift that's partially propping this door open with a dying guy in front of it. It's like, oh, you just get the battery thing, and that's, you know, likely up on this level 3 thing. And I'm like, oh shit, now I gotta deal with more things. And I've, you know, you can upgrade your equipment a bunch, stuff for your head, the helmets. You can make helmets out of some of the creatures you kill, backpacks or a thing you get, where I made a makeshift one that gave me a few more spots. And then I found a couple in this, it was like a gym, an employee gym, I guess, with a pool next to it, bunch of lockers all around there. So I was like going through that stuff for materials and such. And as you get materials, you unlock new things in your crafting. And the neat thing it has is you get recipes for a bunch of stuff. And there's some things that are like, oh, you've come up with an idea for how to make, you know, X thing. It might be another crafting table or something. And it shows you the formula for that crafting table plus like 5, 6, 7 items maybe that can fit into the spots that are there. And so you're like looking like, okay, what could make this thing? It's like maybe some cloth straps and some metal parts and maybe some duct tape, and you try it out. It'll, if it's not correct, it'll just tell you the ones you tried that don't work, and you just try more things. There's no real failure to that other than it taking some extra time. But that's like a neat idea for adding things to it. It's like, oh, I came up with this idea for a potential item because of some of the materials I've seen kind of stuff. So yeah, it's got a lot of neat stuff to it. Seems worth checking out if you are into Half-Life, a lot of the aesthetics of Half-Life and all that. So yeah, that's on PS Plus Extra and Premium. People can check that out, and Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass, people can check it out. It's also on Steam and maybe other PC platforms, I'm not sure, but it was in early access there, so it's 1.0 now. So there's that. That's been pretty fun to jump into. You can't do save states like a Minecraft allows you to do. You essentially just have to like leave the server and it'll save on the way out. So you definitely want to park yourself somewhere safe, so at least when you come back, you're not wondering, like, why the hell am I here? Kind of thing. So yeah, it's got some nice stuff to it. So there's that. Also been playing some DK Bonanza. Been working my way through the second area. Managed to get all the fossils in the first area. I think there's one type I'm missing. But I believe I'm at the point where I should be able to have a shop that can just sell you maps of where the missing stuff is. For a price. But yeah, the second area has a big like little village that has a bunch of shops in it that lets you use a bunch of your currencies to get things you might want. Maybe just buying bananas and some other stuff for whatever you need it. It's the first place I've been able to build a house or pay for a house so that you can play some music there that you collect randomly and kind of chill out with Pauline, kind of take a nap essentially, which is nice because Pauline will sometimes just like have like a late night kind of like discussion with DK on things, which is nice. But also once you do that, you get an extra heart of health. That's like a temporary heart kind of thing. So that's nice. And yeah, the second area, where the first area is kind of based around just punching your way through everything. The second one has less of that. You can still do that, but it's kind of all based on a lot of your abilities to get around, like the turf surf stuff. So you're picking up rocks to use as like a makeshift surfboard to get around the the wider map a little bit more easily, because DK cannot really run mm-hmm. in this. He can sort of move at a decent pace, but if you're trying to get around quickly, you're either wanting to do that or fast travel. I've not really done any fast travel yet, so I haven't really messed with that too much, but that's been a fun game to continue to push through. The first boss fight wasn't too bad for challenge. It was fairly easy, though I got it into a state where it essentially like hops away, and that lack of momentum was definitely a bit of an issue. And I feel like there's one control thing I have a bit of a problem with, because you hold down the right trigger to pull a piece of, you know, stone or whatever you're standing on to grab. And I often hold it, assuming that I can go from trying to grab a piece of ground to throwing it. And I have to let go of right trigger and then hold it down again to go into the aiming mode for that. And I feel like that should be a bit more of a, if you continue to hold it, it should just go right into that mode versus just making you let go. And it kind of leads to frustrating moments where I either drop the items because I am trying to do, you know, a number of things at in quick succession. But yeah, kind of just running into a little bit of control, small control issues like that. But for the most part, still enjoying it a lot. So there's that. And the other game I've been playing, I got a code for this, Dark Fairy Tale Dreamland Survivors. It's on Steam. Mm-hmm. It is a Vampire Survivors-like, but from what you can tell by the title, it's kind of based on fairy tale stuff in a very dark form. And it's a game that I misread when I got the code. I read it as it was going into early access on a certain date, and then found out like the day before, oh, it's been in early access going into 1.0. Mm. So I was trying to put some more time into it. And they've been updating this game a lot, making like notable changes to the game and the progression and all that since launch for the past few weeks in such a way that I'm like, I wonder what's going on, particularly that is causing those kind of big changes. Mm. 'Cause the reviews seem pretty well reviewed. It's pretty positive in a lot of it. These also might be people that have put more time to kind of understand a lot of this stuff. But yeah, the weird thing is you're kind of playing as Pinocchio, and that's the only character. You would think with this kind of thing, you would have a bunch of different fairy tale characters potentially, but it's Pinocchio with the caveats that as you're doing the like campaign, what they call dream mode, you get some like bonus challenges between waves of enemies that are based on the card stuff, tarot cards, like all those types. And once you successfully complete four of those for the same type of card in different runs, you unlock a new version of that character that has, you know, whatever the bonus for that tarot card is. I think the ones I have right now is Devil, and I forget what the other one's called. The other one essentially has you have a second character that is essentially like a mirror mode. So you move your character one way and the other character is moving the opposite way kind of thing. They both take damage, so you can essentially have twice as likely a chance to take damage as before, but you also have twice as much chance to do damage to enemies. So there's like neat ideas around that, but the progression also, you have like three loadout slots, and the progression only ties to the loadouts, not to the character that you're building out. So if I wanted to, make one loadout for each of the tarot card things that I have unlocked now, those would have to start over again on the currency unlock stuff. I believe in one of the recent updates, they changed the whole way the progression is. So in a lot of these games, you're essentially buying stat upgrades between rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't doing that at a certain point. Essentially, they were kind of a certain amount of those you could invest your points into between rounds.
Mm.
But I believe they've essentially rescinded that so that now you can invest into all of them and essentially just build up your stats over time as you get more points to put into it.
Mm.
And as you do that, you unlock the next tier of those stats. And so it's all your basic, you know, HP boost and move speed and pickup and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of a nicer thing, so that you're kind of able to keep progressing and just build up a more powerful character that will, you know, assumedly be more likely to be able to go deeper into runs and that kind of stuff. The weird thing, they also have a currency for beating a run that they call Dream Crystal, which then on the sides of your character when you're picking them, they have extra stats there. Mm-hmm. And do different things, and so you put those points into there, and again those don't transfer over to the other slots, so it's kind of very interesting way they're doing this stuff. It essentially tells me I shouldn't bother trying to do any of those other load slots unless there's something really interesting that's going to unlock at a certain point, but for now I've beaten one successful run in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Which is usually like 15 waves of a minute each. Then between those waves, you get a chance to go to the shop to buy what they are calling eggs.
Yeah.
Dream eggs that are essentially your weapons. And the neat system they have here is that the eggs, essentially, you either activate them to take their like perks, essentially, or you consume them to take their stats that they are going to add to your stats. So that'll upgrade all your stats. But you also take the tags from them, and those are essentially your weapons, and there's no limit to those. So the system here is you have three basic weapons, Lancer, a bow, I think, and a caster, which is like a magic ranged attack. And so you're kind of building up these attacks, and the way it kind of explains, probably not in the best way possible in-game in the tutorial section, is that based on how those stats are, those three basic weapons are upgraded, and which one's the most powerful and the second most powerful and the weakest, those will change what your abilities are overall.
Mm-hmm.
So some will have, there's like a tentacle one based on how you have those ordered, and there's other ones that do these like laser shots, which is neat. It doesn't really explain them well at all. It took me until like my seventh or eighth run to figure this out, like 4 or 5 hours into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise just like, why does this thing keep changing all the time? And it's because it kept changing all the time, but I didn't understand anything why.
Mm.
I was doing that's why the effects were changing so much. So yeah, there's those three, and then there's a bunch of elemental attacks, you know, your basic poison and stuff that will curse enemies, and all these is five total, I think. And so you're building up those as well by consuming these eggs, and you can take on extra challenges and buy them in the shop and all that. It just kind of, it kind of does that. It's so far has not opened up into anything much deeper, but yeah, that's been a pretty solid one of these so far, but it just seems a little light on content.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a $5 game, which, you know, I'm not going to expect a ton out of, but also I'd say Vampire Survivors is a $5 game.
Yeah.
It has a shit ton of content in it because they've added that. Because I've done well enough to add all that content, and they've made it that kind of game where you're trying out different characters and all that kind of stuff, and this hasn't evolved in that way yet. So maybe it will. They seem to be doing weekly updates with some notable changes based on how the community is liking certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's again, it's pretty solid from what I've played so far, but I'm not going to say it's an amazing one of these, at least not yet, but I'm looking forward to playing some more of it. But it's also a rough game to play on a Steam Deck because it drains the battery super fast, as all these do. I was even running it on my PC, and it was... So there's Dream Mode, and there's Endless Dream, which is just you continually playing with no interruptions. You just have to hope a shop spawns in the map or whatever, but it'll throw a boss in every 60 seconds. So I think I got like 15 minutes in or so on that, and it was just a mass of enemies in the middle of the screen with bosses, a number of bosses with health bars on them. And I'm like, these are never getting killed. Also because my character was not super powered up or anything. I hadn't really understood the system there, but yeah, it's a pretty solid one of these. I'm hoping to see it improve some more, but for now, this is a pretty decent one if you need a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I finished System Shock 2, the 25th anniversary remaster. My review is on the SmashFab website for anybody who wants to see it. Basically, you know, it's still a pretty good game. It's still an important release, but a lot of it has not held up, especially when you compare it to games that would come out after it that managed to do a lot of what it did, but streamline it to make it a lot easier to deal with and not have a clunky interface the way that game does. But since I was done with that, I started playing Banishers Ghost of New Eden, which is a game that is on PlayStation Plus, and honestly, I'm shocked it took me this long to play it, because it's an amazing game. It's a Don't Nod joint, so... basically, you're playing these two individuals. One of them's named Red. He's a Scotsman. The other is a woman named Albia, who's a black English woman. And basically, they're traveling to this... the game takes place in 1695, and they're both sort of traveling to this Puritan colony in New England called New Eden, which is, it's not real, obviously, because a friend of theirs, a guy named Charles, has been telling them about this curse that has seemed to overtake the town. Now, Red and Albia, and also Charles, for that matter, are all... banishers, and basically banishers in this universe are people whose job it is to help deal with like ghosts and spirits of various persuasions, essentially trying to sever the whatever link that the ghosts still have with the mortal plane, so they can either ascend which is what happens when they do it nicely, or you can just banish them outright, which is a bit more violent in nature when it happens. But when they get there, they find out that New Eden is practically a ghost town, and no pun intended. There's most of the people have fled. All the children are gone. They've all been relocated somewhere else. Most of the adults have followed them, and by the time you get there, the only ones that are still there are the governor of the colony, a guy who's like a scholar or whatever that lives across the street from the tavern, this woman named Thickskin, who is a hunter who works with the local hunting group, to try and get food to the colony, game and that like. And also Charles's widow. Because spoiler alert, Charles is dead. And part of the early part of the game is finding out what happened to him. Because the way this works is that basically in this game, you go through a series of cases that are called haunts. And what this involves is it involves a lot of like talking to people, doing interviews, gathering information, looking for things like correspondence and letters, diary entries, various objects or such that seems to be to find out like how this person died, why they died, and why their ghost seems to still be sticking around instead of moving on to the astral plane or whatever. And the thing is, you have to do this because ghosts, by their nature, essentially drain the life force of whoever they are attached to. And it's not like a thing of like good or evil. It's just that's just what ghosts do. And the longer they stay around, the longer they have to drain their more life force until eventually they inadvertently kill the other person. You eventually do find out what happens to Charles, what happened to him. And honestly, I'm not really spoiling anything here. It's not even close to the major spoiler for this game. Charles had the curse he'd been talking about. He'd essentially sent for Red and Albia to come and deal with the curse. But there had been too much time had passed between when he'd sent out the letter and when they finally managed to get to New Eden. Cause on top of a bunch of other stuff, you know, this is still 1695. It's still the Age of Sail, and it takes a while to get from, you know, to across the Atlantic. And unfortunately, one of the parts of the curse that have been inflicted on New Eden is that there's basically a perpetual winter, meaning that by the time they get there, even though it's like in, I think, April, there's like a bunch of like icebergs and like pieces of ice floating around on the coast. So they literally have to like disembark from the ship and then get on a rowboat and row to shore. And eventually it just got to the point where it's like, Charles is literally like, I can't stand by and do nothing anymore. I got to do something or we're all dead. And he finds out what the source of the curse is. And unfortunately the source of the curse ends up killing him. And like your first, like official act as a banisher in the game is ascending his spirit so that he can move on. But essentially what he finds out is that what has caused the curse is a type of spirit called a nightmare. Not literally like a bad dream, although it definitely causes bad dreams. It's basically a spirit that is made up entirely of vengeance. And it only comes about because it's usually made up by the victim or victims of some horrific, tragedy, usually some incredible injustice, and a big part of the and you're trying to find out what caused that nightmare. And then I'm not going to spoil it going from there because some stuff happens, but damn, the game is good, like legitimately really good. Unfortunately it kind of came out at a time where it got kind of, you know, it came out like I think last year, and it kind of it got pretty good reviews, but it didn't sell very well, which is sad because it is a good game. So you know, if you got PS Plus, give it a shot because it's definitely entertaining. Other than that, I've also been playing a little game that came out back in 2018 called Zero Ranger. This was made by the same guys who made another game that I've talked about on the cast before called Void Stranger, and that was the one where you're essentially playing this woman who picks up the staff in these ruins, and now she can only move like one space at a time, up or down, left or right. But the staff that she has gives her the power so that she can actually take a tile off of the floor and then use that tile and put it over on an area that will like over like a pit so that she'll have a bridge to cross over to get to the next floor. And it gets a little bit more complicated than that. Obviously the game is kind of notorious for the fact that it can get legitimately very vexing later on. But it's also a legitimately great game. And it's also famous for the fact that it is an absolute masterpiece in like emergent storytelling, where failure will actually like further the story. And like as the game goes on, you know, it'll slowly, incrementally reveal like this universe that you're in and what the nature of these ruins are. Zero Ranger is actually the other game they made. It was actually made before Void Stranger, and that game is actually a shmup, like an old school, you know, Japanese style, top-down shmup. At least much of it is. There's also like some side-scrolling bits later on as well. And essentially, what it is you are given the choice between these two different kinds of ships. One of them is a ship that's like skinny and fast, but the trade-off is that its shots are not as powerful or as like spread out, and it's slightly weaker. Or there's another ship that is bigger and is like it's not thin; it's like squarish to like wider. It's a bit slower than the other one is, but it's also a bit stronger than it is. It has longer bullets. It has a bigger spread of its basic attacks, and those are a bit more powerful. And essentially, like most of it is very much like how a traditional old school Japanese shmup is. Top down, you know, enemies coming down towards you, shoot at them, everything blows up. But as the game goes on, you get some other stuff. Like eventually, like one of the first things you can get is a ability that lets you shoot backwards. That gives you like a weapon that where you can focus your fire from the rear, which you will need because a lot of these later on some of these later stages, like there are a bunch of enemies that will come at you from below, so you absolutely have to have something to fire back there. Another thing is this game is very, very difficult. You will be needing to learn patterns. You will die a lot. And the good thing, though, is the more you play and the bigger your score is every time you die, you'll end up like getting more and more continues that you can use. Because the game has like this sort of like Dharma wheel system where every time you die but you get a big enough score, the Dharma wheel will like fill up, and every time it fills up, you'll get like a new continue that you can use. Also, there's just like some other stuff about it that's kind of odd. The game very makes it kind of clear that something, j just as what is the same with Void Stranger, the game sort of shows us like there's something odd going on here. This isn't exactly just your standard sci-fi shmup that you would get. A lot of weird stuff is happening underneath the surface. And otherwise, it's just a really fun and really solid shoot 'em up game. Highly recommend it. It's like only like I think $11 to $12 on Steam right now. So, you know, if you got the scratch and you want to, you know, play a really solid shoot 'em up with a lot more hiding under the surface, you can do no better than Zero Ranger right now, seriously. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
So yeah, let's get to some news.
Oh yeah.
We had a Pokemon Presents Direct that happened earlier this week, which didn't really have much to it. Mostly just updates for a lot of the existing things they were doing.
Yep.
But one of the notable things that happened there was the announcement of Pokemon Friends, which is a mobile game that's also on Switch. It's free to start on the phones. But $10, and it's based on the Switch, which I played the mobile version, kind of get what was going on here, because the way they described this game, unlike the eShop and all that, was pretty weird, because they described it as having like 30 puzzles, something like that. That was just a weird thing to see. And then one of the videos was like, "Oh, there's 1,200 puzzles," and I'm like, "What the heck is this going on here?" So one, it is a game made for or made by a company that does children's games, and a lot of the puzzles are essentially very quick logic puzzles. One might be just a maze, a quick maze, or one that requires, turning this block with a bunch of stuff in it to try to get the Pokemon's little thing in there out of it. All of that kind of stuff. That you're basically trying to do however many it needs you to do, like 3 to 7 usually in a quick succession, because your speed on that can influence your ability to get more materials out of it. And then you turn into plushies of a good variety of Pokemon. So it has a bunch of individual puzzles of each type, and it has, the basic pack has 30 puzzle types, essentially. It just calls them 30 puzzles, which makes it seem like a huge ripoff. But yeah, you have a bunch of different types in there of each one. So yeah, it's more than it looks, but you're getting the basic pack, essentially. Once you play the mobile game, it takes maybe 5 to 10 minutes to get to that point where it's like, all right, you've done everything you can do for today, but if you want to pay us $10, you can keep playing, you know, infinitely. And beyond that, they have 2 $15 packs that add more puzzles, puzzle types to it. Like it says, 10 additional puzzles, 40 plushes to make, 15 pieces of furniture you can earn, because you're basically between puzzles. You can go to this little room that you can decorate with different wallpapers, furnitures, and display these plushes however you want. You can kind of move them in 3D space kind of thing to build out a cute little room if that's what you want to do. So yeah, they have those two $15 ones, and then I think you can get a bundle of those two for $26, I think. But if you want to go all in up front, you can get a bundle of all that stuff for $34. So kind of makes for a bit of a high price initially, but once you kind of see what's all in it, it makes sense to get really into it. That's why I would suggest checking out the mobile game first and seeing what's the scope of what you're getting into. But what there is pretty neat. And it's kind of one of those daily puzzle game kind of things that you can do some for every day. You get different kinds of yarns that you can essentially use in the little machine that produces a plush. And I think it's the odds I saw on that. So it's like 25% to make this one, 25% of this one, 25%. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty basic. Split up, you have 1 in 4 chance for a lot of the easier Pokemon to get out of each type of yarn. I don't know how much you're going to get duplicates or if it prioritizes the new ones. I haven't played enough of that, but that's a neat one. So there's that. That's the big new Pokemon game that got released. So there's that for those that want it. Let's see. The other thing that got announced this week. PS5 system software beta that is out now in beta test. It adds 2 big features. One, the ability to pair a DualSense controller across multiple devices. So now you can have it sync to your PS5 as well as your PC. And I believe you essentially hold down the PlayStation button, one of the face buttons, to swap between the different devices that it's supposed to be paired to. So yeah, they mentioned PC, Mac, and mobile devices are other devices Switch you're pairing to. Kind of makes it easier to do that stuff without having to repair it each time, depending on whether you want to play on PS5 or PC or your phone. So that's a nice one to add. The other one is a power saver mode that they're adding. I mentioned it's part of their environmental plan, Road to Zero environmental plan. So they offer this mode called power saver mode that won't be in the beta here, but once it's out, it will essentially allow supported PS5 games to scale back performance and allow your PS5 to reduce its power consumption when the feature is enabled optionally by the player. If not enabled or if games do not support the feature, it'll just run as normal. Which people are assuming this is part of some work that they're also getting towards a PlayStation handheld thing that would allow them to have these games run in a lower, you know, a lower spec state that may work on a, you know, a less powerful handheld. So maybe that is also part of this, but for now it's part of allowing the PS5 to run in a more power efficient state for games that support it. So there's that neat little firmware update they got planned. Yeah, available right now, but not out just yet, probably in a couple of months. So there's that. Cool. The other thing that came out already this week.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, we got some stuff coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out the first of the batch of games Arc System Works announced pretty recently, Dear Me, I Was, is going to be out on July 31st, so which I think is, yeah, Thursday. That's their interactive adventure game that is Switch 2 exclusive. Yeah, I believe it's $7.99 on the eShop, so fairly cheap price for what it is. Yeah, so that's neat looking game. I'm curious to see more of that. So yeah, if you need your big fancy expensive Switch 2 to be doing something that does not push it in any way, shape, or form, this is a game you can get for a decent price.
Yeah.
If you want your more visual novel style game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually looks pretty neat, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like these type of games. So, and part of the reason I love the Switch is, and obviously Switch 2 as well, is because, you know, they showed that there is a market for these types of games, and the Switch is like basically the perfect console for them.
Yeah,
you know, like they're not typically like graphically super challenging. You know, they. You can pretty much run a lot of them on a potato, and you know it's they're just fun.
Yeah,
it's the perfect console for them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's out this week. So there you go. Yeah, we also have this: the Assassin's Creed Shadows first story DLC has gotten a date of September 16th.
Yep. That game ended up doing very well financially and critically, in spite of all the haters.
Yeah. This one's called Claws of the Awaji. Yeah, set after the conclusion of Shadows events, you need to beat the game to unlock it. So it gives now a new slate of foes on the new island setting of Awaji. So that's neat. Yeah, free to players who pre-ordered Shadows. But yeah, probably part of the battle, or not the battle pass, the season pass or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
For that game. And also part of that, they have an update that's out this week on the 29th that will be introducing New Game Plus. So if you've beaten the game and want to start all over again and have that much time for that, that'll be out this week then.
Yeah.
It resets story and objective board progression, but allows you to retain your character level, gear, skill points, knowledge, rank, and hideout progression. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess it also gives you the option of restarting the story from the very beginning or skipping the prologue, starting when Naoe first gets the hideout.
Yeah.
I guess that also raises the level cap from 60 to 80 and has some new skill stuff to get. Yeah, new upgrades for the hideouts, and it adds Project 3 for new resources, data files, and exclusive Animus themed rewards. I think it's for the weird little launcher thing they have.
Yeah.
So there's that. So yeah, there's that. That's some nice more content for that game. Mm-hmm. For those that need it. So there's that. We also got some stuff coming out Shortly after that, Frostpunk 2 is finally coming to consoles on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S on September 18th.
Mm-hmm.
So people can check that one out. Seems like it'll also be on Game Pass. So you have an Xbox, you can check it out there. They also have physical editions that will be coming out around the same time, too. That's another good game there coming out to consoles.
Yeah, sounds awesome. What do we got here next?
I'm saying, what are you looking forward to on that game?
On Frostpunk, on what? Frostpunk 2?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but I'll be completely honest. I've played that game. I've played the original Frostpunk both on consoles and on PC, and I'll be completely honest, PC is really the one to do it. Because that game, trying to play it on consoles is a whole challenge in and of itself.
They
those types of games just are not made for console control schemes. You have to have a mouse and keyboard for games like that. But, you know, I'm still going to give it a shot. And I loved the original Frostpunk. So... Yeah.
There's that. Let's see. Next up here, we got a date for Nicktoons and the Dice of Destiny, which is September 30th. That's on everything, I believe, PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. The announced roster so far is SpongeBob, Sandy Cheeks, Leonardo from TMT.
Yep.
Katara from Avatar The Last Airbender, Timmy from The Fairly Odd Parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they may still have some more to announce.
Oh, definitely.
So there's that. It's $49.99 at launch. Special deluxe edition for
$59.99. Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you want to pay more, there's an $80 edition.
Mm-hmm. And I can see Susie from Rugrats. I can see Azula. I can see what's his name from Fairly Odd Parents. Yeah, it looks interesting. I'll give it that. It's just, you know, what's going to separate this from your typical Nickelodeon tie-in game, you know?
Yeah, it seems, from what I've seen, it looks more like an action RPG. I don't know if that means in terms of loot or just sort of a beat-em-up, but with RPG stuff to it.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. This is also game mail, so there's not going to be that much of a budget to it, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
It still looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's the last of the September stuff. We did find out that Borderlands 4 is not going to miss the Switch 2 for too long.
No.
The regular game is out September 12th, and the Switch 2 version is out October 3rd.
Yeah, just a couple weeks. Yeah, a couple weeks later. Honestly, though, I'm going to be playing this on my PS5.
Yeah, I think Randy Pitchford has talked about performance, that the Switch 2 version will run at 30 FPS. That can go up or down depending on how many people you're playing with, what kind of content you're doing, because that game can get hectic at times. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still excited for Borderlands 4, mind you, because I did like Borderlands 3 in spite of the shitty writing. It was still a lot of fun. And I just, I want this game to be good. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, that's a month and a half away. Not much longer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we found out of note from the Pokemon Presents Direct is that there will be a Pokemon Legends ZA Switch 2 bundle.
Yep.
It'll be the same $499.99 price that the Mario Kart bundle is.
Mm-hmm.
But just gets you the Switch 2 edition of Pokemon Legends ZA, which is $70 instead of $80. So you're saving a little bit less, but still saving if you do not have a Switch 2 yet. That'll be out on October 16th alongside the game. So if you have if you're going to get one then you might as well get that bundle.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That'll be another bundle for the holiday season. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Some more news.
More Pokemon news. Yep.
Let's see. Going to the Xbox world. The way they announced this is so dumb, but the Outer Worlds 2 is getting a price drop to $69.99 ahead of launch.
Yep.
And I guess the Xbox has said that no other games for this year will be going to $79.99.
Yeah.
Which is good to see.
Yeah.
Because this was a bungling on their part.
And
you could tell Microsoft wanted to hide by this because they made Obsidian announce it on their social media stuff.
Yep.
I know Xbox social media channel was posting this on their own. Mm-hmm. So the Obsidian announcements, they had one that was normal and one that was in-world.
Yeah.
Which I feel like this seems kind of a shitty thing, a shitty way to write this. Dear Galactic Citizens, we have received your SOS via Skip Drone about the pricing. As an organization devoted to making sure that corporations do not go unfettered, we at the Earth Directorate have worked with Redacted to revise the price of The Outer Worlds 2. While this will not bring peace to the galaxy or even your local colony, we assure you all that we are here to fight for all colonies in every way that we can from the office of the director of the Earth Directorate. So yeah.
Yep.
They're going to make Obsidian the face of this, even though they did not make the pricing decision.
Yeah.
That is a Microsoft decision.
That is 100% a Microsoft decision.
Because I'm betting most of those devs were like, yeah, why are we going higher than everybody?
Yep.
Why do we have to be the game that gets to be the face of this? So yeah, that's a shame for them. But I'm going to bet if they have Forza Horizon 6 coming out next year, that'll be $80. Because 5 has sold well enough, especially on PS5, that they will not take a chance at taking less money for that from a willing audience. But yeah. And doing that made a lot of people writing articles about this say, oh, Obsidian announced this. It's like, no, they didn't. They their social media team was forced to do this, but you can go to their Xbox account on Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever and see no mention of any of this. Not even on Xbox Wire.
Yep.
I don't think. Maybe they posted that later. Yeah, there's an Outer Worlds 2 post on here, but I think it's just about gameplay stuff. Might be from the 16th, so not even recent, so there you go.
Yep.
Good news for that game. Better chance of it doing well.
But
not because Obsidian made any decision here.
All right. Yeah.
Let's see. We got another date here. Terminator 2D No Fate was delayed. It was supposed to be out September 5th, but now they pushed it to October 31st. You don't remember, this is the 2D beat-em-up shooter game based on the original Terminator 2 movie. That looks really good for this game.
Yeah.
It seems like they were... Yeah, coordinating and manufacturing the physical release has taken longer, so they're delaying the release of the game to have that out at launch as well. Which I would not have been, I would not have blamed them for just having the physical release later, but they probably know the sort of people that they are targeting here for this kind of thing. So yeah, making that move to say we'll get all the versions of this ready for launch. Not a great time to put out this kind of game, but I imagine it's not going to hinder it too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I doubt it.
So, yeah, that is a game that just looks really good. Just also one of the weirdest announcements we've had in a while. Because it's like, hey, we're going to make a movie or a game about a movie that came out 33 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
No, make no mistake. It's an amazing movie, in fact. This is like very much like a throwback to like, oh yeah, remember when they used to like have SNES games and arcade games based on movies, you know?
Yeah.
And it definitely looks good. Like, looks like something that honestly, if you know, it was still back in the day and I was going to like, you know, Blockbuster or something and saw this on the shelf, I'd be like, damn, yeah, I got to play that.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that they decided to release this game the same day as Mina the Hollower comes out.
Yeah.
That takes some balls, I will not lie.
Yeah. Though in October, you're basically just picking what kind of death you want. So yeah, there's that. I think it's the last of the dates we have for this year. But yeah, speaking of old movies getting games at random times, we got a game here coming from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the Rankin Bass classic movie, is getting a game release through Game Mill Entertainment.
Yeah,
yeah, coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC this holiday. This was such a random announcement that kind of in on it. Kind of just want to check this out.
Yeah.
That's a classic movie.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Those old, Rankin Bass, movies were really good. If a little off-putting when you think about it because of the really jerky animation style, but yeah, you look at this and it's like, yeah, this is like really low budget.
Yeah.
Obviously. Kind of reminds me, I don't know if you remember that Popeye game that came out last year. This looks better than that, but wow.
Yeah. but it's just a really interesting looking game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll try and check this one out. So there's that. Yeah, just like, we'll take this classic Christmas special and make a 3D platformer out of it. And it's like, nobody has done that in decades.
Yeah.
It's probably the PS2 generation, really, we got anything like that.
Yeah.
So, hey, I think there was also an Elf on the Shelf game that got announced that I didn't care to put in here. Because those are stupid things that became a meme for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to pay much attention to that kind of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Yeah, the other thing we got coming this year is Atari 50, the Anniversary Collection, is getting new DLC called the Namco Legendary Pack.
Yep.
Out of nowhere. Supposed to be out later this year. They're doing a whole host of things with this partnership with Namco. So this DLC will be $8. It'll add new story stuff to the game, but also a number of games, a lot of which are bad.
Yeah.
Pac-Man for the Atari 2600 is a bad game.
Well, the games themselves aren't bad. It's the ports that they made that are terrible.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Pac-Man. Yeah, the Pac-Man one is notoriously awful.
A lot of their 2600 stuff was not great because that was a system way underpowered, made those games famous.
Yep.
I was like, hey, imagine a Pac-Man game that scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad that was. And it was also one of those games made in like 6 weeks.
Yep.
It sold pretty well, but I believe it also got a good amount of refunds. Not
yep.
as bad as E.T., but was definitely one of those games that Atari hung their hat on for a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really pan out like they expected.
Yeah.
But they also are including a number of Atari 5200 and 7800 games, which should be better versions of a lot of these. They mentioned Galaga, Dig Dug, Xevious, and Galaxian, so a lot of those should be better.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Atari 2600 versions that are just squares shooting at squares.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff, so.
Yep.
Yeah, they also announced they're doing a version of the 2600 Plus that is yellow. Pac-Man yellow. What else? They're offering cartridges versions. They're doing a 7800 version of Pac-Man, which did not exist before. That also includes, I think it's a dual cartridge that can also boot on a 2600. So if you want to see that shitty-ass version of the game, you can do that. So yeah, they're selling a bunch of specialized stuff. There's special versions of the wireless joysticks for the Atari 2600 Plus thing, and all the Ghost varieties, which That's also a joke because the Atari 2600 version of the game did not have colors for the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of all the same color.
Yep.
But you can spend $200 for a full package of five of those.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, they have a bundle here. $275 for the 2600 plus with the Pac-Man bundle of mm-hmm. games. And you can get it with all the joysticks and all the games for $434.92.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to spend an absurd amount of money for things that honestly look really nice, but nobody needs, but
mm-hmm.
Atari knows what they're doing here because they know they've got just enough of an audience that wants to buy this kind of cool stuff, you can do that. So there you go. Some cool mm-hmm. stuff there. If you like your gaming history and seeing where Bandai started on the console front,
mm-hmm.
One of the places. They were kind of licensing out their thing all over the place.
Yep.
As they are wont to do. But
yep.
Atari 50 is still getting expanded with new stuff, which is awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. We got one more game here getting a date. It is The Legend of Heroes, Trails Beyond the Horizon, which I believe was supposed to come out later this year, but mm-hmm. got delayed.
Yeah.
And they announced that it'll be out January 15th in the West.
Yes. Finally. Awesome.
Play that shortly after the new year.
Yep. And don't forget that the Trails in the Sky remake comes out in September. So.
Yeah. So you can play that and then this game and be very confused how you get from. So yeah. There you go. Let's see. Yeah, we got another game that was announced that is pretty interesting. Clive mm-hmm. Barker's Hellraiser Revival.
Yeah.
A franchise that somehow never really got a game release. I think they had one in the works, but never made it to release.
Yeah, weirdly enough, like it's that this franchise has been around for a long, long time, and yet somehow no game tie-ins. It's crazy.
Yeah, so they have one here coming from Saber Interactive for PS5, Xbox, and PC. No date yet. The developers Boss Team Games. So that is, I'm not sure what else they've worked on here. Oh, they worked on the side scrolling Retro Realms Halloween and Retro Realms Ash vs. Evil Dead games.
Mm-hmm.
And the Evil Dead, the game, that like 4v1 kind of thing. That's neat. They got some decent chops there. But yeah, they're basically working on a new story here. Seems like a horror shooter kind of game
mm-hmm.
With a lot of the Hellraiser stuff to it. So, yep. Looking through the screenshots, yep, there's creepy, weird enemies with, they look like Voldo,
mm-hmm.
but not censored.
Well, I mean, Voldo, that's kind of what his whole, like, thing was kind of based on to begin with.
Yeah. But he's also got a lot of bloody parts around their nether regions.
Yeah, that's, That is very Hellraiser, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe they do have the guy that was the original voice of whatever the Hellraiser guy is, Pinhead. He is yeah. back to voice this.
Yeah, Doug Bradley.
Yeah. Aiden is the character you're playing,
mm-hmm.
Which I believe I saw is voiced by Xavier Nelson Jr., who's Strange Scaffold. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Somehow he got hired for this, but he's doing voices, a voice for the main character. So that's
mm-hmm.
that's cool for him.
Yep.
So if you want a fucked up horror game, this probably is going to be the one for you. So mm-hmm. yeah, maybe a ways off, maybe next year, maybe the 2027. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll have to find out. So yeah, there you go. Some neat news.
Hmm.
Now let's get to the bad news.
Yeah, here we go.
So the Splitgate 2 saga has continued. They have decided to put the game back to beta state, not have mm-hmm. it be fully available anymore. I don't know. I assume if you already have it downloaded, you keep playing it if you want. But they basically said that they are They launched too early, may have been too ambitious. We rushed certain features, made some boneheaded mistakes, and most importantly, we didn't give you the polished portal-filled mayhem you fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's going to be returning to playable beta form. They're going heads down until early 2026 to significantly rebuild the game.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, along with that, they are doing some layoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many they're laying off, but yeah, they're kind of essentially moving back into a pre-release mode.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly will revamp the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to successfully pull it off, because it's not a thing you do because things are fixable, but also remember that the head of the studio is the son of the guy that co-founded one of the tax companies.
Yep.
Intuit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got plenty of money available to him to spend on this stuff, so he's not using it to spend on people that can work there for the whole time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I imagine it's probably a lot of community people or whatever.
Yeah, probably.
Ones that would deal with a more finished game. So yeah, that sucks for those people, and that this guy is kind of run things poorly, because if you remember, Splitgate launched and was a huge success.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio immediately was like, all right, we're done working on this game. We're going to work on a sequel. Mm. And the guys that they made choices with their engine and design and all that wouldn't allow them to evolve it so much, but
mm-hmm.
That has not worked out well for them. It would have probably been better just to keep working on Splitgate, at least for a while, kind of, because the problem is they didn't really monetize that game very well, so
yeah,
they weren't exactly making a ton of money, and I guess is also part of this, they're shutting down the servers for the original game.
Yep.
So they've said that that cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all because of those kind of poor decision making stuff going on. So yeah, not really a great time for the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of made the opposite decision, like the Among Us devs who were planning a sequel to that game, and then it blew up during the pandemic, and they're like, you know what, cancel that. We're going to just keep working on this game.
Yep.
And that turned out big enough that, you know, they're doing lots of crossovers with other games.
Yep.
Made it into the second Knives Out movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big cultural zeitgeist for a game that nobody cared about before 2020.
Yeah.
So that's everything that Splitgate is not.
Yep.
So yeah. Sucks to be the guy running the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But also sucks to be the people getting laid off because of his stupid decisions. So
yep.
There you go. We do have another studio doing some layoffs as they're delaying things. Supermassive Games has delayed Directive 80/20 to I think the first half of 2026. And laying off some people as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do mention that the Little Nightmares 3 is not going to be delayed as a result of this. That's out pretty soon, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, October 10th. So that one's pretty much done. So mm-hmm. they should not be affected by any of this. But Directive 80/20, which was supposed to launch October 2nd,
mm-hmm.
they decided to push that a bit and kind of keep working on it. So yeah, I guess it'll be upwards of 36 employees that are expected to be laid off. So
yeah,
wish all the best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And for Supermassive, because that's a studio that has a lot of great people working on there, and have made a lot of cool games.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see them keep doing well and survive.
Right.
So yeah, there's your other bad news.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some good stuff here. We got the announcement that Silver Surfer and Beta Ray Bill are mm-hmm. going to be on the roster for Marvel Cosmic Invasion.
Yep.
Silver Surfer just being in Fantastic Four makes sense to announce that character.
Yeah.
Beta Ray Bill's one I'd never heard of, but I looked it up, and He's a Thor side character, basically an alien that became a Thor.
Yeah, basically, yeah, he debuted like back in the 80s when Walt Simonson was doing that book. And basically his whole thing is that he's an alien who it was back during a time period when the original Thor had been depowered for whatever reason. And somehow Beta Ray Bill managed to come across Thor's hammer. And it turned out that he was one of the handful of people that were actually worthy of using it. So he essentially became a new Thor. And eventually he proved himself to be so really cool that eventually Asgard decided to give him his own hammer. And that's basically how he came about. He's kind of an old school, kind of a deep cut character though. So honestly, the fact that they even recognize him is kind of cool.
Yeah. So I imagine they're trying to not just have the Avengers characters in this.
Mm-hmm.
Which they've already got Captain America,
and
Wolverine and Spider-Man, but they're also adding other characters, so that's nice. Mm-hmm. I guess they also announced the voice cast for the characters.
Yep.
Steve Bloom is voicing Venom and Beta Ray Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Bloom, Captain America and Silver Surfer. Trevor Duvall is Rocket Raccoon. Cal Dodd is Wolverine. Josh Keaton is Spider-Man. Matt Mercer is Nova and Annihilus. Aileen Mithin as Philavelle.
Mm-hmm.
Elysia Rotaru as She-Hulk. And Allison Seeley Smith as Storm.
Yep.
So I'm guessing this is probably about the... must be the final cast, the final people getting announced. So,
because
I think that is supposed to be out this fall.
Yeah.
So they're probably finishing up all the work they're going to do for that and have it out here in the near future. So,
yeah,
it'll be fun to see.
Definitely. Yeah, it looks awesome. Like I can't wait to play this.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that.
And I love the fact, and I do genuinely love the fact that, you know, they're not just staying on, like, the characters that are in the, like, mainstream, you know, public consciousness. They're bringing some of the more obscure ones here, too.
Yeah.
Which is just really cool. Shows that, you know, these guys are, like, legit fans.
Yeah. So there you go. Let's see. Yeah, we got some business news.
Yep.
Sony Group Corporation and Bandai Namco Holdings have signed a strategic partnership. And as a result, Sony will acquire 2.5% of Bandai Namco Holdings, become like the fourth or fifth highest stakeholder in the company. This is not necessarily a gaming thing so much, because if you don't know, Sony is one of the biggest anime companies in the world. Now that they've acquired Crunchyroll and a few other companies. One of the other ones is Bandai Namco, who owns all the, whether it be all like the Jump properties, essentially, Dragon Ball, One Piece, all those big ones. Hence why they keep making those games, because they're the main stakeholder in them. This would seem like a thing that's, if you are investing in anime, you would want to invest in those companies, and that seems like what Sony would want to do, and probably also getting those properties onto their services. So they'll probably do some game stuff here and there, but yeah, mostly just investing in their anime properties and all that. So not a huge surprise.
No, not really,
once you realize all that. So there you go.
Yeah.
No. Let's see here. We got some more. Yeah, some more good business news. The Chinese Room have completed a management buyout.
Yeah.
So that they can depart from Sumo Digital ownership. Which is cool. Hopefully that works out for them. Sumo Digital acquired them in 2018 for £2.2 million. And now they're going independent again. Yeah, they're going to be led by current studio director Ed Daly, facilitated by VC firm Hero Capital, but has also resulted in some layoffs as a result of divestment.
Yeah.
So that sucks, but they will be able to, you know, be in control of their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably good enough for them. They're the ones working on Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. They're also working on two new IPs, as they've said here. So, yeah. They said we had been working on new IP that needed investment, and that was no longer possible with Sumo's new model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe Sumo Digital is under the Embracer family of corporations.
That's right.
And so I believe those companies are essentially at the point where they are investing huge sums of money in new properties that don't seem like they're going to be obvious breadwinners.
So,
yeah, that is a whole thing. So, yeah, good on the Chinese room for making a deal to buy themselves out. So hopefully that works out for them.
Definitely. The farthest away they can get from Embracer Group, the better. Just 100%.
Yeah.
And that doesn't just go for them. That goes for basically anyone.
Yep. Now if you want to get mad, Lollipop Chainsaw.
Oh, boy. Get ready, folks.
A property that did pretty well back in the day on the PS3 and Xbox 360 as a fun, campy action game. Suda 51 and James Gunn.
Yep.
That was a pretty cool game. Then some companies came in to remaster it this generation that did not go well. It was fine, but I think it lost some music stuff out of it as a result. Mm-hmm. And there were some other changes that were made.
Yep.
That were not huge surprises, but it ended up not being a huge seller. So, the Dragami Games and partner Nada Holdings announced that they're going to be working on a new game and anime adaptation. And sort of put out a press release with all this, being committed to a new game and a new for this. And mentions here in one of it, as with the original, the new title aims to recreate a world rich in dark humor. The development process will prioritize staying true to the distinctive tone and spirit of the original work without imposing excessive creative restrictions in the name of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, as it spells out. And it's like,
That doesn't even make sense for the original game anyway. Because, like, the game was specifically made to be, like, super campy and weird. There's, like... Yeah. And, like, for the record, we need to make a point. Suda 51 isn't involved in this. No. Neither is James Gunn.
No.
These guys basically bought the IP and are essentially using it to, you know, create controversy and stuff with it. And it's just stupid.
Yeah. It's a property that didn't necessarily need to become a big deal thing.
Yeah.
But this company has seemingly acquired it and wants it to be that.
Yeah.
So they're investing into it and also trying to appeal to, I don't know, the culture warrior crowd.
Bullshit. Which is bullshit because that's like the original game, its whole sort of premise was that it was really going into like that old like B movie aesthetic, you know, which I mean, if you think about it, that's sort of a lot of what Suda 51 stuff is. He loves to work his, you know, his film buffness into like every game he makes. And, you know, that's he was like obviously really inspired by like old B movies, by like Troma, stuff like that. Anybody who's played like a lot of his games knows that he is not like some weird reactionary.
Yeah.
Especially if you played his most recent stuff, you know that is the exact opposite of who he is. And it just does not make sense for this property.
Yeah. And it's just a very weird thing to suppress release on.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's a thing that's we'll keep an eye on to see what the heck's going on here, but yeah, it's a thing that's nobody should have any high expectations for it. So yeah, it's that's a thing that will happen, unfortunately.
Yep.
Yeah, they do mention they have key staff members who were involved in the previous title, but not, you know, directors or the lead writers or anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a weird thing. So there you go. We'll get you to another story that'll get you mad.
Oh, this one is frickin'... Oh, it's just so many layers of bullshit.
Yeah, so much like the Steam store, itch.io has been also hit by payment providers being pressured or pressuring them into what they've done is delist all the not safe for work games on the platform. The queer ones, but also a lot of porn or racy games. There's also a lot that are, compared to Steam, Itch is kind of a very open platform that allows people to make all sorts of games and products on there. There's lots of tabletop stuff on there, books, even just game assets and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of like student projects and projects developers make that are just, here's a little free thing I made in my free time. All that kind of stuff. It's also been kind of the backup platform to Steam, where if you're putting your game that may not make it onto Steam, you probably also have it on Itch as a backup. And yeah, it seems like they have mentioned this whole thing going on. A bunch of developers noticed their games were being essentially I forget what they called it here. It's not being removed, but de-indexed, I believe was the term. They've also changed their content rules for this results. It's not really gone down super well, especially because the developers on the platform have not been we're not involved in the announcements of this stuff. So a lot of people just found out randomly through, you know, whatever social media they were on or checking on their game or whatever. And yeah, this isn't just affecting small games, it's affecting award-winning games like Consume Me that's coming out later this year on Steam. That, as I said, Itch was a backup platform that the early versions of that game were being available on. And yeah, a lot of developers are very responsible in marking their games as, you know, adult or whatever tags they use.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff. And now her game has been, Jenny Jiao Xia is, you know, unhappy that her game is now gone. Even though what it, the subject matter it has is not one that should fall under any of this stuff. But
yeah,
it's just,
oh,
the way that this all is happening in a very haphazard and very kind of, I'll say maybe violent matter, causing a lot of people just be super angry at the wholesale change of what kind of art is allowed on these servers. And that has really caused a lot of chaos. There are people on Blue Sky that are organizing, you know, information on what numbers to call at these, you know, Visa or MasterCard, and mostly saying like, I'll take as much time, not be angry at the people, because the customer service people aren't the ones causing this. You want to take up their time and mess up their metrics because they want to get through these calls as quickly as possible, and don't take the bait for when they offer an email, because these companies would like you to send to an email that they don't have to give a shit about.
Yeah.
Versus messing with their phone systems and all the metrics there. You know, asking for managers and all that kind of stuff, and just wasting as much time as possible. And it seems like it's definitely getting noticed. So
yeah,
I want to see if it has any actual effect, but yeah.
Yeah, and in case you're curious, this is, in fact, related, once again, to Collective Shout, that group out of Australia. For the record, the article that you linked to from Kotaku gives that group way more credit than they even deserve because they're not really like a feminist group. They're more of like a evangelical culture warrior type group, kind of like Moms for Liberty that masked themselves with the feminist label.
Yeah.
They're doing something that's similar to like what another like American group was doing a couple years ago. When they were actively trying to attack Steam. I forget what that other, I think it was called something like Exodus International or something.
Yeah.
That ultimately ended up failing. I'm still not exactly sure how this group has managed to be as successful as they are.
Well, with a lot of this stuff, it's a lot of direct focused anger at one place or a couple places that makes them seem like a much bigger force than they actually are.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I think the people on Blue Sky organizing this stuff made it seem like it was only like 1,000 calls or emails that it was, and it's like, we're bigger than this. We should be putting the same kind of pressure in the opposite direction to show these payment processors that they're making bad decisions, and trying to get them to go the other side.
Which I mean, if that's the case, where like these folks were like purposely misinformed, I think it would honestly, it wouldn't be that big of an of a deal to like just inform them, like, yeah, this is you were misinformed. These folks are like specifically targeting a certain group of people for it. But you know, that's not the world we live in right now, so
Yeah. It's like how the NRA has a huge presence despite their membership not being that huge. It's because they have a pretty simple message and they have people that are willing to show up at the places to push that message. And that can be as effective as the people as or more effective than the people just yelling on Twitter or Blue Sky about gun control. So yeah, it's one of those things that's people on the left have to realize that they have to also show up for things and not just yell into the void. Because the void don't give a shit. Especially the capitalist void.
Especially so.
So yeah. Yeah, I think it's gonna end up doing it for the show. We'll have to keep an eye on this itch process, but the way that Itch does their ownership of things you've purchased that can make it real hard to back up your purchases and all that kind of stuff. So it's worth going through your bundle purchases and all that and double checking things. At least the important things you have. And make sure you can redownload those. But for now, that's kind of where you want to look at for now. And also just check on Blue Sky for people that are offering tips on all this stuff. So that's where you're gonna go for that stuff. So yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon for joining.
Always.
We should have Danrib back next week. He's at Comic Con, so he's watching panels and trying to play what he can over there. So yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. And yeah, I'm gonna double check what we got coming out this week. Yeah, the 31st has like eight things coming out. We talked about one this week, which is Dear Me, I Was, Dead Take from Surgeon Studios, Cooks Serve Forever, along with Earthion, 9 Years of Shadows, Ninja Gaiden, Ragebound, Spy Drops, and Time Flies. Which I think we should have two reviews of two of those games. So there's those that are coming out. There's also Achilles Survivor, Tales of the Shire, A The Lord of the Rings game, my favorite branding title in a while. I love a good, our branding overrides your attempt to make this title sound like a thing written by English people. Just having A and the right next to each other is a clear violation of grammar Nazism, but the brains always win.
Yep.
So that's why your title's looking like that. So yeah. That's going to do it. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also here to be unfortunately baited by brands and nostalgia, but try to do what you can to push back on them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.